Welcome to the Drama Teacher Podcast, brought to you by Theater Folk, the Drama Teacher Resource Company. I'm Lindsay Price. Hey. Hello. I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. This is episode 187, and you can find any links to this episode in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode187. I got a question for you. Actually, I got a whole bunch of questions for you. Are you a one-man band in your drama program? Do you feel a little bit like an island where you're doing everything yourself? Do you dream about being surrounded by other drama teachers in a healthy, thriving, supported program? Well, that's what our guest today did, and she got it. She went from being alone, a one-man band, on an island, to building a program that supported three drama teachers. How did she do it? What was her vision for her classroom? And most importantly, what's her advice to all of you listening? Okay, enough with the questions. Let's get to it. Hello, everybody. I am here talking to Sylvia Davenport-Veith. Hello, Sylvia.
Hello.
So tell everybody where in the world you are.
I am Sylvia Davenport-Veith. That's what I write under. I live in Oxford, Georgia. I was born in Florida, raised in Florida, earned a BFA in theater at University of Florida, an MED in English education, University of Florida, moved to the Atlanta area, and taught public high school English and theater for 25 years. The last 13 years, it was exclusively theater.
Awesome. And that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the meat of this is going to be all about building a theater program. Sylvia, when you started, it was just you, right?
Yes, it was just me. And I had to take over a situation that I think maybe a lot of drama teachers might be able to relate to. And that was that the department had no money. And in addition to having no money, the previous situation was that a lot of money had been spent in the theater department without ticket revenues replenishing that money, and there was a $6,000 debt.
Oh my goodness. All right, so
yes.
Let's keep that. There's your teaser, everybody. So yep. We will come back to this. We're going to put a pin on this, but so there's your little teaser for listening for the rest of this podcast. Did Sylvia get out of $6,000 debt? Don't tell us yet. Don't tell us. And I also want to make sure I mention that we know Sylvia from her playwright, her playwriting side. We have her play Prom Night in our catalog. A lovely little play. I love Prom Night. Let's start with you. So what was your experience with theater when you were in school? How do you connect to it?
I think that's really, really important to bring up, because when I was in high school, I started doing community theater plays when I was 10 years old outside of the school setting. And of course, I was always the geek that was president of the drama club and all of that. When I hit high school, we had a drama teacher that really wasn't very interested in us. And so as students, we had to take on a lot of responsibility without her support. I mean, really no support. She would have me drive to wherever she was, pick up the keys to the school. I would open the school. I would be in charge of the rehearsal. I would lock up. I would drive the keys back to her. And then she would not even come to see our little plays.
So that's awful.
It was awful. And that stuck with me when I decided to become a teacher, that it was very, very important to me to give the students 1,000% support. And I really believe every school has to have a place where each student feels at home, whether that's on the football team or in the chorus or in the art department or in the theater department, wherever it happens to be. Everybody has to have a little home, a little protective home, and that's what I tried to create in all the theater departments in which I worked.
You know what? That is what an interesting origin story for you, Sylvia, because usually it's the complete opposite, where theater in high school was so like had such an amazing impact, and that's the thing that drove, you know, a teacher forward. But I think it's really interesting to have the other side, where it was like, despite your circumstance, you connected to theater and connected to teaching and let that drive you.
Right. It's really true. And I often thought back, I'm not going to do what she did. I am not going to do that. And I'm not going to, I'm going to give my students plenty of responsibilities because I think that's necessary. But I'm also going to be there every second when they need me. I'm not going to just leave them. One time she pulled me aside. This was in the late 60s, probably 1969, when pop festivals were popular, Woodstock, all that kind of stuff. And I had been working on a variety show, just our little drama club, with the opening number being Hey Big Spender and little scenes from plays and so forth. She pulls me aside and tells me that she signed us up for a mini pop festival on the football field. And at some point, the rock band that's playing at one end of the field is going to be told to stop. And everybody's going to have to walk over to the other side of the field where we're supposed to be set up with our little show on the football field, doing Hey Big Spender and scenes from Guys and Dolls and a little bit of absurdist theater. And I'm thinking to myself, no, no.
I think I had a nightmare like that once.
Yes, yes, yes. And I will never forget all of our peers just rocking to the rock band and the band saying, oh, hey, man. Sorry we have to do this to you, but the drama club has something to present at the end of the field. And all these hostile faces walking toward us. And we're in our little Hey Big Spender dresses. It was really, really not a good thing that she did to us.
And still you persevered. Like that.
Yes, I persevered.
That might have.
Yearbook. There's a picture of it in the yearbook with all of us rolling our shoulders as best we can.
Oh,
in
man.
The Hey Big Spender number. Oh, heavens, heavens, heavens.
Okay. So let's put that away, because, oh, Sylvia. Oh, my
it's
goodness.
It's too awful to think of, I know.
So the silver lining is, and that wasn't enough to deter you from either theater or teaching.
No.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Awesome. That's a really awesome story. Okay. All right. Back on track. Okay. So high school is over and you're pursuing this, a high school educator, and you land in this position where it's, just you, and, things have not been awry from the start. I'm guessing you might've seen some of the same kind of hostile faces walking into that position.
Oh yeah. Because what happened was, it was a new principal, and I got a phone call from the athletic director because the sports department paid off the $6,000 debt. And in this particular school, in a lot of ways, we were fortunate. We had a fully operational theater. They allowed us to do production classes. They allowed us to do after-school rehearsals up until the moment I got the phone call in the summer, which was, yes, we know you're taking it over, but we just don't think doing plays is a feasible thing. It's just not working out. So we want you to teach plays. Just have your students read plays. We don't want any more productions. We don't want any more stagecraft. It's just not working out. And I was devastated because the students had auditioned in the spring. They were already cast in West Side Story. They were already cast in some children's theater productions. They were already cast in 1X because we had production classes. But there was no money. There was no money for the West Side Story royalties or to get the book or to get the orchestrations. So I thought about it and I asked to meet with the new principal, which I did. And I asked him, please, I said, if we if we renege on these promises to these students, we'll never have credibility as a theater department again, because they've been looking forward to this all summer. May I meet with the parents? May I make a deal with you that one third of our box office will always be turned over to pay off this $6,000 debt, that we keep two thirds to move on, that we impress upon the students that the days of being entitled and just thinking this money is going to be spent and your costumes are just going to appear, that we do need to form a booster club, that we do need to do a lot of fundraising, and that I will always share the budgets with the students and with the parents so they have a full understanding of what these shows cost. And it can be a really important life lesson for whatever they go into later in life. That you have to prepare. You have to find out what things cost. You have to set goals. You have to raise the money. He agreed.
Oh, man. Oh, that's there's so many life lessons in there. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
You know, like, well, I think that is one of the, number one, I'm not going to say it's the number one, it is an up there problem that we face as a publisher, is that we, you know, when we hear from students and teachers who do things and just have no clue how much it costs to put on a play. And that means right. that someone, their experience was that someone didn't tell them. And that they don't have, other than the fun of putting on a show, there is the business side of putting
exactly.
on a show.
Exactly. And Lindsay, I will tell you that on Facebook, a lot of my former students are in touch with me, and certainly they're adults now with babies and, you know, children that they're raising. And I posed this question to them last week. Do you remember those years, and what stands out to you about those years? And all of them were writing to me, this was the first time I learned how to do a budget. This was the first time I became invested, passionately invested in doing the activities that might not be so much fun, like selling poinsettias or whatever it happened to be. But I did it passionately because I knew it was necessary, because we needed our West Side Story costumes, or we needed our Tartuffe costumes, or we needed, you know, whatever it happened to be. If we wanted to do a period piece, we needed lumber to create the sets, we needed to pay the royalties, we needed the orchestrations. And I'll tell you what really became our cash cow was the children's theater department that we formed. And the elementary schools that surrounded us and the middle school previously had been going downtown to the Alliance Theater, the professional theater, once a year to see a children's theater production there. Once we got them into our school, because another thing I said to the kids, you can't have anybody walk in here and not walk out impressed. You have to be professional. You have to give it your all. Nobody pays money to watch you fail your math test. People That's are awesome. Paying money, and they're not going to want to watch a bunch of people stumbling around up there, not knowing what they're doing. First of all, it makes them upset for you. They feel sorry for you. They feel uncomfortable. We don't want them uncomfortable. We want them having the time of their lives. We want them drawn in. We want them relaxed. We want to take them to another place. We want the magic. And so everything you do, you have to make people walk out saying, whoa, I'm coming back. I'm bringing friends. Another thing I hit, we had some students, and I know every theater department has them. They feel that they're entitled to be just maybe a little bit edgy in class with their teachers.
Oh, I don't know any.
You
of
don't know
students.
Yet,
no,
like
none
that.
Of them. No.
So I said to them, you know what? If you don't have teachers coming in here to see the shows so that they can talk them up, that's why the last couple of years you've had 20 people in the audience, even though you've done fabulous things. And 20 people is just not going to cut it. You need to make sure the teachers want to come in and see you. Because if you've been rude and obnoxious, how can you ask them to see you again on their own time at night? They're not going to come. But if you are lovely and sweet and kind and helpful and you do your homework, they are going to want to come and see you at night. And lo and behold, that was another thing that helped us, the teachers getting on board. And of course, forming a booster club, getting the parents very knowledgeable. And what I did on every syllabus, we were on a semester system. So every syllabus printed the budget for every single thing that we were doing. And of course, one acts were less expensive. Children's theater, less expensive royalty-wise, but a lot of times costuming would run up the budget a little. But you know what? After you made those wonderful costumes and you dry clean them, they lasted and lasted and lasted.
Okay, so let's re-hit because some of this stuff I think is like really, really important for someone listening and thinking about that they are in the same position yeah. that you were in. That one person maybe walking into a situation where there are hostile eyes or a debt. And I think that the number one thing that really hits home to me is the responsibility on stage and off.
Yes.
And that is the thing. If you want to build a theater program, I think teaching responsibility just seems to be so great. I think I like the idea of publishing the budget so that everybody, most importantly, the students know how much things cost. Mm-hmm. And that they invest in the other activities that I know a lot of teachers have trouble getting their students to invest in. And I love the idea of that responsibility is, I love nobody wants to see you fail your math. Nobody pays money. That's
right.
Nobody pays money to see you fail your
exactly.
math test. You have to be, if you want people to pay money to see what you're doing, you had better be. You better be good. You better be good in your classes and good on stage.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm very proud as the years progressed. These students, and that was another thing. You weren't going to be just an actor. You can forget that. You're going to have to learn how to stage manage. We had projects where they got involved in set design, always set construction, lighting design, being the light board operator, costume design, sewing, all of it. And you'd be amazed at the adults you can find who love sewing. Or from my theater work around town, I was very fortunate to have theater artists who did lighting design, sound design, set construction, come and volunteer their time to spend with the kids and with me. And overall, I was looking for a well-rounded student that would come out having used, because you wind up using psychology, sociology, English, physics, math, all kinds of things. It's an across the curriculum activity when you're involved in theater business. And they all learned how to do all of it. It wasn't just the acting. So everybody did some acting. Everybody did some set construction. Everybody did selling. Everybody did selling ads for programs. Everybody did typing programs. Everybody learned to sit at the sewing machine and do seams. And of course, everybody found their niche, you know.
Well, it sounds like what you're doing is you're making all of the roles in theater as important as what's on stage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are no stars, no divas. I was always weeding the diva garden. Of course, you're going to have some students that are phenomenally talented as actors. You're going to have that. But it was very important to me that they not get swelled heads, because out in the real world, there's always going to be somebody that you're competing with that's as good as you or better. So a little humility goes a long way.
And I just want to go back to this idea of looking for sort of a community to sort of help you out. You know, if you're on your own, I think that, mm-hmm. you know, trying to find parents who have those skills, you know, to help to help you out going out into the community if you have a community theater or another school or whatever, just to finding someone to might help with like a lighting design, for example. Building a community helps you not feel so alone, I imagine.
That is exactly what happened. And over time, I mean, Rome was not built in a day, but over time, the theater department that when I stepped into it, as great as the shows were, because I had seen them 2 years previously, for 2 years as I was teaching some theater and a whole lot of English, and I was involved, they did beautiful plays. Their Of Mice and Men was to die for, but for some reason, they couldn't attract audience. And over time, it took us a long time, and we did keep turning over one third of our box office. We did pay off the debt. It took us about 4 years. We did pay off that debt. And the fact that he allowed us to keep two thirds, and also parents were making donations. So you print their names in the programs. You don't say how much people are donating, but you honor those parents and teachers and anyone else in the community that's contributing to help these students and support them. So over time, yeah, we had a big community effort. We found out that the school nurse was a fabulous seamstress, and she loved to help with costumes. The special ed parapro took over as costume designer. I had no idea she had all these talents. And she came to me one day and she said, "You need help." And lo and behold, oh my goodness, all these beautiful costumes she's designing. She knew how to go to the fabric store, put them together with just the right fabrics. Not too expensive, not too cheap, just right, the kind that you dry clean and you keep adding to your costume stock. She was able to get parents with their sewing machines for the bigger shows. And over time, you know, we had beautiful things made for Molière plays. We raised the money to buy the wigs for the Molière plays. We were able to do shows like Hedda Gabler, Picnic, whatever period it was. It got to where, probably 3 years into it, it got to where I could just give Carol some pictures and I would say, "I would like her picnic dress when she has that dance with him to look something like this in this color," and there it would show up.
That's so awesome. Okay. I want to come back to this notion that it really seems like you are hitting all different kinds of theater. But first, before we get on to that, just in terms of working with parents, and you mentioned a booster club. How did you start and grow your booster club? Just talking about community, and how did that help?
I remember this so well. I had to face the students the first day of classes and give them the horrible news that we didn't have the money for the orchestrations. We didn't have the money for a music director. We didn't have the money for a choreographer. And they were cast in West Side Story. And all of these things had been auditioned for the previous spring. So they had gone the whole summer thinking all of this was just going to happen. But that's how the debt was built in the first place. Things happened, but no one raised the money to pay our part of it. The sports department had to do it. So I said to them, I gave them something to take home with the budget. I said, "I have a fabulous choreographer that will work for $500. I have a fabulous music director," because our chorus was not involved with us. They had a whole separate thing that they were committed to. The chorus teacher did not have time. Same thing with the band department. They had their own thing. They did not have time. So as a theater department with musical theater part of our curriculum, we had to pull it off. So that was $1,000 right there. Plus I gave them how much money it was going to cost in royalties and to get the books and to get the orchestration, blah, blah, blah. Then we have costumes, la, la, la. So I announced a booster club meeting. And I remember at the time I was doing Cat on a Hot Tin Roof at night. I was playing Sister Woman. And the night before this booster club meeting, our director was having us do these trust exercises and all that stuff that they make you do, where you have to fall back or close your eyes and stumble around. And I remember all I could think of was, what's going to happen tomorrow? Are they going to just be so angry with me that this was promised to their children, and now all of a sudden, all of this has fallen on everybody? I was really worried about it. And you know what? This mother got up and told her own story as a young girl that her parents were alcoholics. They never came to see her in anything when she was in high school. I had no idea this was coming. She said the only thing that kept her alive was her drama work in high school, and that she was going to begin with $1,000 check so we could have a music director and, I'm sorry, and a choreographer. And that's how she started the meeting. She asked me to speak first. And the next thing you know, checkbooks were being opened up all over the place. And that's how we got started.
Well, that tells you the power of theater,
doesn't
it?
Does. It
okay. So what was, when you were continued working, what was, just to give some folks an idea of, you know, how a booster club might work. Like, was there a parent panel for your booster club? Was there someone, cause it's not really the teacher who's supposed to be in charge of booster club.
Exactly. And that is something I have seen other teachers kind of get into a terrible situation where the booster club parents may start trying to dictate to you what shows you should be picking, or they're kind of pushing, I'll be involved as long as my student gets a part. And you have got to stay far away from that. You have to make it very clear that you will be selecting the shows. You will be doing the casting. It doesn't matter if someone's booster parent is president of the club. You may or may not get the role that you want. You have to keep those two issues separate. What our booster club, and I was very, very fortunate with these parents, what our booster club did, they understood, and the school also explained to them, their role was to fundraise. Their role was to be supportive. For example, if you have a rehearsal that starts at 3:00 and it's over at 6 or 6:30 and the kids are starving, we got to a point where the booster club said, hey, we're going to bring dinner. And they're going to eat dinner while you give them notes. And then they'll be ready to go home by 7:15, but they have had dinner. So that's what they did for us. They provided dinner. They came up with yard sales to raise money. The big fundraiser they came up with every holiday season was to sell poinsettias. So the students would go out and sell poinsettias. And then there was a day all these poinsettias arrived at the school and the kids picked up, you know, the ones that they were going to be delivering to their customers. They came up with the idea of our selling ads for programs and assisted us with that. And they were just tremendous support. But they did not get involved because that was made clear to them by the school and by me. They weren't involved in selecting the season. They weren't involved in casting.
Oh, I think having it come from the school was probably like a great idea.
It was.
Makes it more official.
Yes. Very official.
All right. And as we're sort of wrapping up here, so I just want to go back to, it seemed really important that you were giving your students a wide variety of different types of theater genres, you know, musical, children's theater. So talk about why that was something that was important to you.
It was really, really important to me because there's so much to discover in the theater. And like one of my former students wrote to me on Facebook last week that he felt that some of our very best work was the minimalist work. The one acts where we didn't do the sets and all that kind of thing. It was bare stage. He felt that some of that was the most striking work that we did. Others were really remembering the more elaborate sets and lighting designs or costumes or the bigger musicals or the classics that we did. Or, of course, everyone remembers the children's theater program because it was so much fun. The way that worked. And I want to talk about double casting for a minute.
You go.
We had some students when we were starting out that weren't always the best behaved. And the first time it happened to me, it was panic. We had an opening night on a Friday, and that Friday morning, one of the leads was suspended. And oh boy, what do you do? What do you do? And the rules in our school were if you're suspended, and they were pretty strict, a certain number of checking in late, and you could get in-house suspension. And if you have in-house suspension, you cannot participate in an after-school event. So I decided we're not going to ever get into that situation again. And I went to a system of double casting. And yes, it's a little bit more work. I had a cast one and a cast two. And the way it worked was I would block whatever we were going to block with cast one while the cast two students were sitting and watching. They weren't walking it, but they were taking it down. The next day, cast one is sitting and watching while cast two does what we did the day before. And over time, when the flu hits or someone doesn't behave properly, it has a tremendous effect on the students. Also, someone's not learning their lines, but their counterpart is, oh boy, I guess I better get these lines down because I am replaceable. So the way it worked, Wednesday and Friday was for cast one. Thursday and Saturday nights were for cast two. And then, if someone truly got the flu, that student did not have to try to drag themselves in when they were on death's door. Their counterpart was going to handle it. It was going to be all right. They kept their grades up. They were not allowed, if they didn't have a certain GPA, if they weren't passing, they weren't allowed to participate in after school or evening shows. And again, it became a wonderful incentive to do what you're supposed to do at school, which is do as well as you possibly can in every class. So yeah, it was an across the curriculum thing. It was a building character thing. It was a responsibility thing. Don't check in late because you're letting your whole team down. If you're not going to be there because you've had too many check-in lates and now you're going to be an in-school suspension. So you had to function as an individual and you had to function as a member of the team. And that's really what life is all about.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that it's really interesting because when we think about the phrase building a theater program, we think about, you know, what you can say to a fellow teacher to help build their program. But it's also about what are you instilling in students? And your students can also be a big part of building your theater program. You know, with,
They are,
yeah.
because over time you begin to attract those advanced placement students, those students that have come to plays and they see all the fabulous things that are happening on stage, behind the scenes. They want to be a part of it. And over time, we paid off the debt, and then we had so many students signing up for classes, we needed to add a second teacher. And more years passed because I was there for 13 years. By the time I retired, there were three full-time theater teachers handling the intro to theater classes and the production classes and the stagecraft classes.
Well, that's a lovely end to the story.
Yes, I think so.
That's awesome. That's wonderful, Sylvia. And I just think that I think there's just a lot of really wonderful little bits of knowledge. I'm just trying to think of the right word. It's like, oh, it's not advice, but it's just like knowledge, wonderful nuggets of knowledge in terms of how long it takes to build a theater program and the attitude of building a theater program.
And just take one step at a time. And everybody has to realize if you're passionate about this and you're putting in your after-school time, it does take away from other things in your life. So striking a balance is important for the theater teacher as well, so she doesn't get or he doesn't get too burned out. And that's up to each individual. Try to pace yourself because it won't be built in a day. It
Nothing
won't be
ever
built.
is.
No, it won't be built in a year. You just continue to build on. But do you try to reach out to your community? Do you try to reach out to your community theater people who can take some of that load off of you? My weak spot was set designing and set construction. I was a little lost on all that. Even though I had a theater degree, I was still a little lost on that. Boy, when those people showed up that could supervise the kids with drills, and I'm right in there learning too, so that when they weren't around, I could carry on. Do try to check out those resources. I think lots of theater people working in your community theaters are going to be more than happy to volunteer some time.
Awesome. Thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been lovely.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you. And I recommend Theater Folk to everybody that might be listening. It's a great, great, great publishing company. And they're so supportive. And they care about the kids and they care about you.
Oh, it's almost like we
It's
paid you to say
true. It's
that.
true. It's true.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you, Sylvia. Before we go, let's do some Theater Folk news. Not only is Sylvia a teacher, she's a playwright, and we have her play Prom Night in the Theater Folk catalog. It's a small piece, a three-hander, lovely characters. It's romance. It's a teen romance between an outcast and a football player. I am a sucker for plays that have characters who act against type. It might be my favorite kind to write. This would be awesome for scene work, for classroom scene work, for character development work, and also acting in a specific genre. You can read sample pages for Prom Night at theaterfolk.com, or you can catch the link in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode187. And if you are producing Prom Night or any one of our plays, we really want to hear from you. We want to see a picture. We want to maybe see some rehearsal footage, not long, 30 seconds, and we want to brag about you. We're doing production features that showcase your successes. Hey, if you're even having a struggle, we want to share so that everybody can hear your story and see where you are coming from. We want to hear from you. All you got to do is send info to us at tfolk@theaterfolk.com. If you're doing one of our plays, if you're doing a Theater Folk play, we want to hear about your experience. We want to share your experience. Finally, where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every second Tuesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk and on the Stitcher app. You can also subscribe to the Drama Teacher Podcast on iTunes. Just search for the word Theater Folk. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.